people. When I don't see just myself, then it's going to give a huge meaning to my success. For example, if I think working in a particular company is success to me, if it's just for me, then it's really, you're going to end up in some dead end.
Mm-hmm.
But if I intend to work somewhere to help out my family, to feed the hungry, to, I don't know, carry out the so many religious
To forget
deeds,
about the ego.
To forget about myself, to mm-hmm. forget about ego, not completely myself. And then it's aligned with the purpose of life. Because purpose of life was not just to, it's not just to stay on the, you know, on the prayer mat, right? Like
yeah.
we had a person who was always on the prayer mat, and Prophet said he's not entering the paradise because he felt like he has wrongly understood the concept of ibadat, worship. And Allah also says, oh, we did not create man and jinn except for ibadat. So ibadat could be everything.
Your interaction with other people, how
yeah.
much help you're going to
See,
offer.
For example, I said, I intend to take this degree because with this degree, I want to educate others. I want to spread the ilm. Right?
Yeah.
And like, it was very interesting for me. Like, Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him and his purified family, he said that there are some sins that even are not even erased when you even pray for the
yeah.
forgiveness. Then a question was asked, then what does erase such sins? How are these sins erased? And he says, hard working to earn more. See, so like in religion of Islam, when we say, okay, real success is to promote spiritual growth within you, it never means you have to leave the worldly life aside.
Yeah. Like the models we have had in
harmony.
Our Islamic heritage, none of our imams were sitting at home doing nothing.
Doing nothing, right?
Only worshipping. None of them were like that.
So there was always a balance. There was always a balance. And there should be this balance. Like, it's not even like, I don't know, well, it's not reported much, but it's like Imam Sadiq alayhi salam was once wearing something very beautiful, and a man approaches him and he tells him, I never saw Prophet wearing such clothes. He says, that time the condition of Muslims was not really good, but in this time every Muslim can afford such dressing, so it's okay. Adornment is liked in Islam. So when we say something about growth and success, it never means that you have to abandon the worldly life.
Exactly. Yeah, this is very important. Yeah, this is a very important point that we have to take into consideration, and that's why I asked this question. When we say success in the religious respect, we do not mean that you have to forget about your life, even the materialistic life. Like, we had so much of recommendations about you have to gain prosperity for you, yourself, and your family. So I asked the same question. What makes my purpose valuable?
Just like sister had stated about the ayah, actually I had the same ayah in my mind, like وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسِ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ. When a person like is created for a purpose, actually serving the purpose,
and
is
literally,
the actual success.
It would be very much more better if you give us the translation of that verse.
Okay, sorry. So we did not create the jinn and humans except that they worship me. إِلَّا
yeah.
لِيَعْبُدُونَ
And this
that
worship has got so much of definition.
Exactly, definitely. So, you know, when we plant an apple tree, okay, the purpose of an apple tree is to give apples,
yeah.
isn't it? When we see apples upon the tree, we say, oh, this is a successful
Mission accomplished.
Tree. Exactly. This tree is a successful tree.
Yeah.
This has served its purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Effect.
Likewise, a pen. Okay, when it's writing properly and it's like it wrote properly for us and it didn't get spoiled, it served its purpose. So the creation of the pen is successful in this arena. Likewise, as we human beings, as she as example, to be more precise now, if we serve our purpose, then we are successful once. Now, what is serving the purpose goes on a very large scale. Example, worshipping Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, just like the sister has stated. Example, if we are living a materialistic life to what we see is apparent, but all our intentions are based on the beliefs, then we are serving the purpose. That
mm-hmm.
is when we are successful.
Yeah.
We see people who live materialistic life. They help other people. But the intention is not in line or it's not connected to the beliefs. Yeah. The belief system...
Intentions have a great role.
Exactly. Those are the ones which serve the purpose. Example, helping the needy. I am helping the needy, okay? There's another person who is helping the needy, okay? But I might serve the purpose of my creation, okay? Maybe I'm worshipping and that person is not worshipping.
Yeah.
You see, the purpose changes. So, over here, me, because I have intentions behind, I'm a successful... I'm just giving you an example. I'm not talking about myself. Yeah. I'm just speaking on
a
general basis.
To make it more relatable.
Exactly. So now I am a successful person. Why? Because there is intention in line with my beliefs. And that person, example, he might do good deeds, okay? He might do things which are, in apparent way, found to be good, okay? But... at the same time, he might not serve the purpose of his creation. You see what I mean?
Because of the intention.
Exactly. So intentions are what make us a successful person or an unsuccessful one, okay?
Exactly.
According to me, okay?
Yeah.
And this is a very deep discussion, of course, which I don't know if I can wind it up very quickly. But this has a very deep root. With wilaya, with guardianship, with leadership.
For sure, yeah.
Okay, like example, and again, controversial discussions come in place, which I don't want to enter it into. Okay, wherever there is leadership, wherever there's wilaya, those deeds are accepted. If we see the context of many ahadis, okay? So over here, me helping, me living a materialistic life even, is not a bad thing. Unless I have a deep root with... example, with the imams, with the Ahlul Bayt, with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, with the hereafter.
And your intentions being in line with whatever
with
God
them.
Has planned for you.
Exactly.
Thank you for your listening and your attention. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Rabbal Alameen, Ya Rahmanu, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi. Let the Ummah rise again, let us see daylight again, once again. In the limelight.
The U.S. Zionist plan is to create instability in Syria, divert attention from Israeli regime atrocities in Gaza and Lebanon, and to make up for its failures against resistance forces. The Zionist regime is a cancerous tumor, and the countries of the region ought to realize that as long as it exists, there will not be any peace and security in the region. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Kahan International wrote, intensive diplomatic efforts are underway to safeguard the sovereignty of Syria following the terrorist takeover of large parts of Aleppo with the backing of the U.S. and Zionist entity, but diplomacy alone will not guarantee peace in the region. Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi, after visiting Damascus and discussing countermeasures against the macabrely murderous Takfiris, stopped in Ankara on the way home to exchange views on the same topic with his Turkish counterpart Hakan Fidan. The two called for efforts to preserve and build on the achievements of the Astana peace process for Syria, involving Iran, Russia, and Turkey, whose foreign ministers would soon meet to discuss the security situation. The U.S. Zionist plan is to create instability in Syria, divert attention from Israeli regime atrocities in Gaza and Lebanon, and to make up for its failures against resistance forces. The Zionist regime is a cancerous tumor, and the countries of the region ought to realize that as long as it exists, there will not be any peace and security in the region, let alone the mere calls for peace in Palestine, even if the bestial Zionist entity were to practically end its 14-month genocide in Gaza. There is no guarantee that it will stop its 76-year-long atrocities. Ankara's view that necessary steps must be taken to pressure the Israeli regime into accepting a permanent ceasefire is thus purely delusional, since a usurper entity that does not belong to the region can never be trusted. The only solution is to weed it out, and as part of such efforts, it is vital for combating the Takfiri terrorists, as Iran has pledged. Therefore, Turkey should seriously pursue the Astana peace process and cease its support for forces trying to destabilize Syria, since the only beneficiary of such a policy is the Zionist regime and the U.S. The Syrian rebels are Zionist agents and will never hesitate to indulge in terrorism in Turkey. These are dangerous elements and pose threat to all countries of the region. In view of these facts, apart from diplomacy in the framework of the Astana peace process, what is required is field efforts with arms and ammunition to flush these enemies of humanity. The next step for the axis of resistance is to mobilize all resources for the liberation of Palestine. According to Press TV, these terrorist groups operating in Syria under the umbrella of Hayat Tahrir al-Sham are supported by the Zionist regime and Western powers and represent a broader geopolitical dynamic at play. The Zionist entity's recent disgraceful defeat in southern Lebanon after nearly 70 days of unchecked aggression marked its inability to penetrate Lebanese territory due to Hezbollah's adept military maneuvers, prompted a strategic recalibration. To salvage its already tattered image, the Israeli regime is now pursuing new fronts of war, aiming to disrupt critical supply chains, facilitating the transfer of arms to the Lebanese resistance. Israeli regime's recent actions can be characterized as defeatist, reflecting its acknowledgement of losing the war in Lebanon against the Lebanese resistance before it even began. Its escalations in Syria are not only attempts to regain some semblance of control, but are also aimed at undermining Hezbollah's resistance capabilities. However, the SAA remains steadfast in its defense of the Syrian people and its support for the axis of resistance. The freedom fighters in Syria are deeply loyal to President Bashar al-Assad and inspired by the martyrdom of iconic leaders such as Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. Over the past decade, Syria has significantly bolstered the resistance in Lebanon, including advancements in drone and missile technology for Hezbollah. In parallel, an intense propaganda campaign against the SAA is in full swing, similar to those launched against the Arab country beginning in 2011. Such efforts aim to delegitimize Syria's role in the resistance axis and weaken its influence. Yet history demonstrates that when an enemy resorts to these strategies in the aftermath of a defeat, it is often only a matter of time before it faces another failure. Syria's resilience and its strategic alliances continue to thwart the Tel Aviv regime's attempts to destabilize the region, and the enduring battle for a liberated Palestine continues.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
In mid-November, Iran marked a significant milestone in its space ambitions with the successful launch of two new satellites, Qusar and Hudhud. This launch represents a pivotal moment in Iran's ongoing efforts to enhance its space capabilities, following a previous achievement in March when the Chamran satellite was successfully orbited using the domestically developed Qaem space launch vehicle. Looking ahead, Iran plans to accelerate its space program with the upcoming launch of up to seven additional satellites within the next 5 months, utilizing both the Qaem and the Simorgh, another indigenous SLV. These advancements come in the face of decades of harsh, unjust sanctions imposed by the West, underscoring Iran's determination to assert its technological independence and develop its space exploration capabilities against all odds. But what significance specifically do the launches of the Qusar and Hudhud satellites have for Iran's space program? What are the main challenges hindering the country's space development? And what are Tehran's long-term goals for its space industry? These and more on this edition of Iran Today.
Today, the Islamic Republic of Iran is recognized as one of the world's top 10 countries with the capability to both develop and launch satellites. This achievement highlights Iran's advancements in aerospace technology and its growing independence in space exploration.
Since the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979, Iran's adversaries have attempted to stifle the country's economic and scientific progress through various sanctions, including the space industry. However, Iran has not only preserved but has also advanced its capabilities in space technology, marking a significant success for the nation. Mohammad Amin Ohangari serves as the editor-in-chief of SPASH, an Iranian news agency dedicated to reporting on space technology and related developments.
The space industry is a completely international industry. It is very challenging for a country to advance in this big industry, relying solely on its own resources, and only a few countries can do this. We have compensated for the negative effects of the sanctions with our human resources. Educated young individuals with great perseverance have become the main drivers of the country's progress in the space industry and have helped Iran achieve indigenous knowledge in this field. From this perspective, yes, Iran is truly considered an exception.
What sets Iran apart from other countries, at least in the West Asian region, is its commitment to using domestic capabilities and indigenous technology. In today's world, satellites play a crucial role across numerous fields, including telecommunications, environmental monitoring, and reconnaissance. Recognizing this, Iran is steadfast in its pursuit of developing strong infrastructure and advancing its missile and space technology. Mas'ud Taifi Fijani is an Iranian space expert who believes that the advancements in Iran's space industry are exceptional.
Generally speaking, what is the significance of aerospace industry and technology for any country?
فناوری فضایی رو موتور پیشرفت فناوری میگن.
Space technology is considered the engine of technological advancement. The reason is that every space project, including these two satellites, Hothot and Kosar, is the result of cohesive teamwork with various specialties over a relatively long period. Therefore, when a space project comes to fruition, it indicates that a specialized team in different technology fields has been able to work together under strong management to produce an advanced product. Unlike other projects, space projects are not typical. I mean, they are not like assembling a car on a production line, but rather unique and singular projects full of challenges and issues requiring problem-solving abilities. Otherwise, your project will fail. Now imagine that such a difficult task succeeds in Iran, a country under the most severe sanctions, where you are on your own and cannot rely on anyone else's help. You have to rely only on your expertise, creativity, and problem-solving skills. In this regard, the success of space projects in Iran speaks volumes.
The two domestically manufactured satellites, Hothot and Kosar, have commenced signal transmission. Kosar has an anticipated lifespan of 3 years, while Hothot is expected to operate for 4 years. The successful reception of signals indicates two key achievements. First, that the launch was successful. Second, that the satellites are functioning properly and they have successfully separated from the launch vehicle.
We also sat with Professor Fatullah Omi of Tarbiyat Modarris University.
There are two key parameters concerning satellites. First, their operational lifespan in orbit, which we should aim to extend to at least 10 years. Second, services we need to enhance the services these satellites provide. The capacity of satellites to offer services is directly linked to their size. Larger satellites can deliver more services. Most importantly, we need to establish a space station in Earth's orbit, which is an achievable goal.
The Kosar satellite is a state-of-the-art cubic satellite. Designed in the summer of 2019, Kosar weighs 30 kilograms and is powered by solar panels. It orbits an altitude of 500 kilometers and has an expected operational lifespan of 3.6 years. Kosar is equipped with advanced imaging technology, featuring cameras that capture images in both near-infrared and the visible spectrum, including red, green, and blue. With a color imaging range of 15 kilometers and an impressive imaging rate of 6 frames per second, it boasts an average resolution of 3.45 meters ground sample distance, marking it Iran's most advanced satellite to date. The high-resolution remote sending satellite is designed for a variety of applications, including agricultural management, natural resource monitoring, environmental assessments, and disaster response.
The first application of these satellites is in agriculture. For instance, we need to know how much of a crop is produced annually. These types of satellites can assist us in this matter. This enables officials to understand, for example, which crops are in short supply so they can import them in a timely manner, or which crops are abundant and can be exported. These satellites can also help farmers monitor their crops, determining whether their produce has grown sufficiently or if it is exposed to specific pests. Ultimately, this can significantly increase productivity in the agricultural sector.
Mr. Taifi said such satellites are strategic for the country.
The space industry can be very strategic for a country like Iran, which is faced with a lot of challenges. Iran is a vast country with diverse climates and is considered one of the crisis-prone countries in the world, I mean natural crises. These satellites, considering their applications, can be very helpful in decision-making, planning, resource allocation, and crisis prevention.
The Hothot satellite, on the other hand, is a lightweight telecommunications satellite weighing just 4 kilograms. also a cubic satellite powered by solar panels, Hothot shares a similar orbital altitude of 500 kilometers, but has a slightly longer planned lifetime of 4 years. Hothot serves multiple purposes, including agriculture, land surveying, transportation, and environmental protection. A standout feature of Hothot is the capability to provide Internet of Things services, which will enhance communication in remote and hard-to-reach areas with limited terrestrial network access.
Both communication satellites and imaging satellites play a very important role in crisis management. With these satellites, it is possible to easily and accurately estimate the extent and location of damage. Precise satellite images of incident sites can direct rescuers straight to the scenes without any waste of time.
We have a lot more to cover today, but first let's take a moment to catch up on the latest headlines.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
Hello everyone, welcome to the news section of this program. Here we'll go over some important news headlines. Iran front page, Iran's next steps in space, launching Nur 4 satellite. The commander of the IRGC Aerospace Division's space unit has announced the forthcoming launch of the Nur 4 satellite, an advancement on the recently deployed Nur 3's foundation, integrating improved imaging and communication functionalities. General Jafar Awadi detailed the capabilities of the Nur 3 satellite, which can capture high-resolution images with a 5-meter precision from an altitude of 500 kilometers. The satellite also features a signal collection sensor for communications interception, acting as a relay to enhance connectivity. The Nur satellites primarily serve defensive support roles, including reconnaissance and data gathering. Nur 4 is expected to be an upgraded version of Nur 3 with operational capabilities, including establishing communications between military units and improving reconnaissance efforts. Tehran Times: Kosar Hothot satellites sent first signals to Iranian scientists. The Iranian Space Agency announced that the Kosar and Hothot satellites have been successfully launched into orbit and that the first signals have been received from both. The successful launch of these satellites into orbit underscores the perseverance and commitment of Iran's scientific community, demonstrating the nation's capacity for ongoing innovation and advancement in the aerospace industry. As Iran's satellite program progresses, the country's role in global space exploration efforts is expected to gain greater visibility in the years ahead. Newsweek: Iran joins the space race. Iran has joined the space race alongside the U.S., China, and Russia as the country launched the first privately developed satellites into space, marking its entrance into the world of space exploration, according to the Tehran Times. Faqih Imani, the CEO of the company behind the creation of the satellite, said that the development process took 15 years, saying, "This is only the beginning for us. We are only going forward from here." The country also launched a research satellite, Matha, earlier this year and used its own vehicle launcher called Simorgh. Describing the launch of the two satellites on Tuesday, Hassan Salarieh, the head of the Iranian Space Agency, said, "Achieving significant goals in this field is unattainable without robust participation from private enterprises. We believe that the private sector should enter this field in a competitive environment considering market criteria." Kayhan: Iran's expanding horizons in outer space. Iran already has several satellites in outer space, such as the Research Sensing Pars-1 and Khayyam, whose tasks include observation, among other things. Last March, Iran placed the Chamran satellite into orbit on board its Qaem space launch vehicle. With its technology rapidly expanding, Iran will be launching up to 7 more satellites into space during the next 5 months using Qaem and another domestically manufactured SLV named Simorgh. These developments, which are entirely peaceful, have alarmed the U.S. regime, whose sanctions of the past 45 years have failed to deter Iran's progress. Unlike the Americans, the Islamic Republic does not believe in militarizing outer space to the detriment of the environment and ecology of planet Earth. Iran's efforts, like in all other fields, are for peace and progress and in line with the humanitarian aspirations of the Iranian and world people. Its presence in outer space is also vital for safeguarding its sovereignty and territorial integrity, predicting environmental disasters, tracing underground and undersea resources for national development, and frustrating the evil designs of devilish powers. And thank you for joining us this section. Please do stay tuned for the main narrative.
The launch of the 2 new Iranian satellites into orbit signifies the introduction of the country's private sector into space industry and highlights the strengthening of Iranian-Russian cooperation in this field.
We visited Space Omid Company in Tehran to speak with its founder and CEO, Dr. Hossein Shahrabi Farahani. He explained that starting a private venture in the space industry is more challenging than it appears. However, he noted that hope has been crucial to the company's success. After all, Omid means hope in Farsi.
What were some of the challenges that you faced in the beginning?
For nearly 6 months, we focused solely on finding a location to set up our team. We engaged with multiple government organizations to secure a building that would allow us to commence our activities as a private company. But we faced numerous challenges and were unsuccessful. Eventually, with the support of the Presidential Deputy for Science and Technology, we were able to establish the company. Acquiring customers also proved to be difficult initially, as few were willing to enter into contracts with us. Many institutions were hesitant to trust a private sector entity operating in the space industry. However, over time, we were able to build that trust and overcome these obstacles.
Developed by Iranian engineers at the local knowledge-based company Omid Faza, or Space Omid, over the past 5 years, the Kosar and Hothot satellites represent a significant landmark in Iran's pursuit of advanced space technology. Founded in 2018, the Omid Faza company is staffed by talented Iranian university students. Their mission is to design and build lightweight, cost-effective satellites aimed at enhancing satellite systems in low Earth orbit.
How do you assess the role of education and research in your advancements? And do you consider cooperating with universities and scientific institutes?
Nearly all our team members are university students, which fosters a strong connection between our company and the academic community. One of our requirements for students wishing to collaborate with us is that their theses must align with our company's projects. Thanks to the hard work of these students, we have successfully built satellites that meet the country's stringent standards. For instance, the ground sample distance, GSD, used in the COSAR satellite is the highest quality available in the country. We're committed to tapping into academic talent and plan to continue strengthening our relationship with the university.
The company's mission took a momentum in 2019 with the design and assembly of the COSAR satellite. It continued with the development of the Hothot satellite. Both satellites were produced with support from Iran's Vice Presidency for Science and Technology, the Iranian Space Agency, and the Iranian Embassy in Moscow. On November 25th, the Kosar and Hothot satellites were launched from the Vostokny Cosmodrome in Russia aboard a Soyuz rocket. Iran's participation in this launch highlights the growing collaboration between Iran and Russia in space exploration, a partnership that has been developing for nearly 2 decades.
Earlier this year, the Iranian Pars-1 remote sensing satellite was launched from the same cosmodrome, while the Khayyam high-resolution imaging satellite was successfully deployed from the Baikonur in August 2022. Dr. Shahrabi told us why they decided to launch their satellites from Russia.
One question that arises is that why you chose a foreign and rather a Russian launch vehicle.
شما وقتی که میخواد کار بین‌المللی، کار فضایی بکنید، حتماً باید رویکرد بین‌المللی داشته باشید. چرا؟
To embark on a project in the space sector, adopting an international perspective is essential. This is a fundamental principle in the industry. Why is this the case? One key reason is economic efficiency. For example, if we plan to launch 200 satellites, offering services to only one country, proves to be a very bad idea economically. Therefore, it is crucial to expand our customer base to multiple countries. By bringing Russian companies into the project, we can also extend our services to Russia with their collaboration. Moreover, partnering with established Russian companies in the launch sector has significantly reduced the risk of project failure. As a private company with no prior launch experience, benefiting from the expertise of experienced Russian partners has been vital to our project's success.
The entry of the private sector into Iran's space industry, combined with government collaboration, is expected to drive motivation and investment in this crucial field. This shift can foster innovation and job creation, while also enhancing national security and Iran's standing in the global arena.
Though it started serious efforts in space development with some delay in 1996, the Islamic Republic of Iran has successfully built approximately 25 satellites and launched 13 of them into space. These achievements have been accomplished primarily through the country's own capabilities, despite facing numerous challenges and obstacles.
Professor Omi served as the head of Iran's Space Research Institute for nearly 7 years. He expressed that the West is firmly opposed to Iran's advancements in the space industry, exerting every effort to undermine the country's space program.
What are some of the challenges and obstacles that Iran has faced regarding its aerospace activities?
A number of Western countries possess the technology to build and launch satellites. These countries have consistently attempted to hinder Iran's progress in the space industry. In fact, so-called developed countries have actively sought to prevent Iran's advancement. During my presidency at the Space Research Institute, while we were engaged in aerospace research, the U.S. Office of Foreign Assets Control imposed sanctions on both the Institute and me. Many other research centers in the country that have been active in this field have also faced sanctions from Western countries.
Iran has made significant strides in its space program, achieving remarkable milestones since its first successful launch of the Safir space launch vehicle in 1996. The Safir rocket was launched again in February 2008 and in 2009. It carried the Iranian satellite Omid into orbit, marking Iran's entry into the exclusive club of space foreign nations. This remarkable progress is credited to the determination and innovation of Iranian youth who have embraced the mantra, "We can." Their efforts have propelled Iran's space ambitions forward despite all problems on the way.
A positive development that has recently begun is that the satellites being built in Iran are no longer solely for research purposes. Rather, they're satellites that can provide extensive services to various sectors of the country. For example, the Hodhod and Kosar satellites or the Chamran or Nur satellites have wide-ranging applications such as imaging and facilitating communications that the general public can benefit from.
In 2009, Iran sought to take significant steps in its space exploration endeavors by launching living beings into space. That year, the Kavoshgar 3 spacecraft successfully carried several animals, including a desert rat, a turtle, and various worms, along with human cells, into orbit. Following a series of challenges, the Pishgam spacecraft achieved a historic milestone in 2012 by successfully launching a monkey named Aftab
to an altitude of 120 kilometers. After a 20-minute flight, Aftab returned safely to Earth, marking a significant step toward Iran's goal of sending humans into space in the future.
What are some of the future plans and missions for Iran's aerospace activities?
The space document, approved by the Supreme Council of the Cultural Revolution in 2013, mentions that Iran must move towards placing humans in orbit. Placing humans in orbit means that we need to create living conditions for them in space. This requires extensive research, and during the 7 years I served as the head of the Space Research Institute, we accomplished a great deal towards this goal, and this effort has continued after my tenure. At that time, we also launched monkeys into space and successfully returned them alive to Earth. Sending humans into space is part of Iran's space program, and we are actively working in this direction.
Despite operating on a relatively modest space budget of approximately $20 million, Iran's achievements stand out when compared to the United States, which spends around $9 billion, and Russia, which allocates $6 billion to its space program. As Iran continues to push the boundaries of its space program, it not only demonstrates its technological prowess, but also solidifies its position on the global stage, challenging all the challenges.
The imposed sanctions can hinder the country's development path. Nevertheless, with Operation True Promise 1 and Operation True Promise 2, which were essentially retaliatory operations by Tehran against the Israeli regime, Iran demonstrated that its military sector has developed astoundingly, despite the most severe restrictions on it. In these two operations, Iran showed that even under the harshest sanctions, development is possible and products can be built to the highest global standards. In my opinion, if the models used in the military sector are applied to the civilian space industry, we may witness advancements beyond what we have seen so far.
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Please do join us again same times next week. Until next time, take care.
Let's recite the Quran.
وَإِذَا قَرَأْتَ الْقُرْآنَ جَعَلْنَا بَيْنَكَ وَبَيْنَ الَّذِينَ لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ بِالْآخِرَةِ حِجَابًا مَسْتُورًا
القرآن نور وبيان القرآن هدي الإيمان القرآن مسك الختام قرآن عليك سلام.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجه. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners listening to IRIB English Radio right now from all over the world. Welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. I'm really glad having brothers Hussein Ruhullah, brother Masoom, brother Hassan Nasrullah, and Ali Nasir. Everyone, welcome. Are you fine?
Alhamdulillah.
Everyone is great, and let's get started. Inshallah, today we will be practicing Ayah 36 of Surah Yunus on page
213.
Okay. So, brothers and sisters, hope you have the Quran with you, dear listeners. Let's listen to the recitation of this ayah, then inshallah we'll practice it.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
وما يتبع أكثرهم إلا ظنا إن الظن لا يغني من الحق شيئا إن الله عليم بما يفعلون.
Nice recitation, mashallah. So Allah Almighty says in Ayah 36 of Surah Yunus, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وما يتبع أكثرهم إلا ظنا إن الظن لا يغني من الحق شيئا إن الله عليم بما يفعلون. So guys, we have knowing and not knowing something, okay? In knowing and not knowing something, we have different levels. For example, when you talk about having knowledge about something or not having knowledge about something. Sometimes you know something a little. You really little know about something, okay? You're not sure about something. This is called?
Von.
Shak.
Oh, shak.
Shak, okay? You have doubt about something. For example, you're in doubt, like, is there someone the door or no? Sometimes you know that there is no one, or you even know nothing about it. You know nothing about whether somebody is at the door or not. This is not, you say, look, you're illiterate, you're not knowledgeable about it, okay? So nothing. Sometimes you know, you kind of, you can guess, like, maybe there is someone at the door because you heard some noises, okay? Somebody talking or knocking. Somehow the sound of knocking. You are in doubt whether someone is at the door or someone is not. So 50-50. Sometimes it's more than 50. It's more than 50. You, three times you heard somebody's knocking the door. But you're not sure whether somebody is there knocking the door or no. Because you, before that you know that there is no one, for example, around your house, okay? Now, a little, you see, you're in doubt. Somebody knocks once. Is there someone or no? Then you see, no, there is not anyone. Then again, for the second time, for the third time, you kind of become suspicious about it. When you know about something more than 50%, okay, this is called dhann. Mm-hmm. More than 50%, more than shak, it is called dhann. But again, higher than dhann, there is something called itmi'nan. Itmi'nan. Okay? For example, you become really sure that, oh, there is someone at the door. Because a little bit you heard something saying, okay? Open the door, for example. Or you even thought about it, okay? Something came in your mind, told you that you should open the door. So more than doubt, more than dhann, you have more knowledge about it now. So you get more certain about it, okay? This is called itmi'nan. But when you're really, really 100%, you become sure about something and you completely see, for example, from that camera, for example, you can see that there is someone at the door. This is called ilm, or this is called yaqeen, certainty. Okay? I want Ali Nasir to recite this ayah once.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
أحسنتم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
أحسنتم
وما يتبع أكثرهم إلا ظنا
أحسنتم وما يتبع أكثرهم إلا ظنا. Make sure you extend the sound of noon whenever it has a shadda sign.
Yeah.
Yes? And also the letter meme is the same. With a shadda sign, extension and nasal sound. Nasal sound. So, Hassan, is he allowed to make a pause there?
Yes, Jim allows us to stop.
Jim allows us to stop. Okay, next part. Inna dhanna.
Inna dhanna la yughni min al-haqq shay'a.
Inna dhann, Allah heavy.
Dhann.
Dhann, Allah heavy.
Yes.
إِنَّ الظَّنَّ لَا يُغْنِي مِنَ الْحَقِّ شَيْئًا
إِنَّ الظَّنَّ نون again it has a shadda
الَّذِينَ يَذْكُرُونَ اللَّهَ قِيَامًا
If you see the Holy Quran in Surah Muzammil, ayat number 20, Allah Tabarak wa Ta'ala says, and recite as much as possible from the Quran. As much as possible.
Rabbana, Rabbana.
That's why they say one of the beauties of the eloquence of the fasahat and balaghat of the Quran is that whenever you open the Quran, it's as if it speaks to you today very, very clearly.
The Quran is a covenant of God for His creature. It is misaq. It is covenant for His servants. It is necessary for the Muslims to read this covenant and recite 50 words every day.
So, min al-haq la yughni min al-haq shay'an changes to?
Alif ma.
Alif ma shay. Next part. Inna allaha.
إِنَّ اللَّهَ عَلِيمٌ بِمَا يَفْعَلُونَ
أحسن. The last point, عَلِيمٌ بِمَا ميم with تنوين. It's followed by the letter ب. What rule is applied?
إقلاب.
إقلاب. Good job. Changing that تنوين sound, ن sound to a hidden ميم sound. Right? So, look, أهل البيت عليهم السلام. Who are the guidance, okay? Yes? The lights of guidance. Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. Verily, Imam Hussein alayhi salam, inna al-Husayna misbahul al-Huda wa safinatu al-Najat. Yes, Najah.
Yeah.
So verily, Hussein is the light of guidance and the ark of salvation. So look, Imam Hussein alayhi salam is the light of guidance. They will not take us to, for example, uncertainty. They will not take us to doubt. They will not take us to, for example, wrong path. They will take us to the truth. They will take us to the true knowledge. They will take us to yaqeen, certainty. Got it?
Yeah.
So we should follow them. We should follow them. In this ayah, Allah Almighty talks about the pagans, that they don't have yaqeen, they don't have certainty. But for example, anything about worshipping, about whatever. They're just following their dhan. So it's just something more than doubt that they have. Okay, it's not knowledge, it's not certainty. Okay, so guys, inna Allaha alimun bima yaf'alun. There is a long explanation about dhan. Okay, you can refer to the tafsir books, about you can refer to the Islamic teachings. That has a long discussion. We don't have that time as well. We don't have that ability to explain all the everything there here. So, I just want to explain this part. إِنَّ اللَّهَ عَلِيمٌ بِمَا يَفْعَلُونَ One of the attributes of Allah Almighty is what?
عَلِيم.
عِلْم. Yes, He is عَلِيم. He is knowledgeable. Without knowledge, you can't create anything. So, Allah Almighty has knowledge. He is the all-knowledgeable, okay? He is the source of knowledge. So, yes. Listen to me and repeat after me. Listen and repeat. Ready?
Yes.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
وَمَا يَتَّبِعُ أَكْثَرُهُمْ إِلَّا ظَنَّا
وَمَا يَتَّبِعُ أَكْثَرُهُمْ إِلَّا ظَنَّا
إِنَّ الحق شيئا
إن ظن لا يغني من الحق شيئا إن ظن لا يغني من الحق شيئا
إن الله عليم بما يفعلون
إن الله عليم بما يفعلون
صدق الله العلي العظيم
صدق الله العلي العظيم
Ahsantum. Thank you so much, brothers and sisters, dear listeners. Thanks for being with us up to this time. That's it from us for today. Stay with Arab English Radio for the next coming sessions. Hassan, Hussein, Ali Nasir, and Masoom. Thank you so much. Allah bless you all. No questions?
No, sir.
See you in the next session. That's it from us for today. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Wa sallallahu ala sayyidina Muhammadi wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajahum.
Let's recite the Quran. A joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The Syrian Defense Ministry has denied reports that the country's army has withdrawn from the western city of Homs. Iran has successfully launched an indigenous space tug into space aboard a homegrown satellite launch vehicle. Israel's relentless air and artillery strikes continue to claim civilian lives and cause destruction across Gaza as the regime presses ahead with its genocidal war. Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. The Syrian Defense Ministry has denied reports that the country's army has withdrawn from the western city of Homs. The Syrian Defense Ministry says the army is present in Homs and its countryside and is deployed on fixed and solid defensive lines. It adds